But I'm not impressed by your performance.
Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad.
We're not here just to take part. We're here to take over.
Hello and welcome along to Chapter 17 of What's This Going Podcast. My name is Danny Murray and every week you laugh.
The eyebrows went up there.
Yeah. I'm
Danny. I'd say you're like, I'm Troy McClurk.
Wow.
You might remember me from such.
That's my intro voice, man.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
You have to at least get the intro voice and then I'll just go back to my regular Scobie, Scrow.
Cromlechfieldian
language.
Every week we say, who wants to take the intro? Me and
every
you, Danny.
Week. Every week. Because I'm the one that holds
it. I always want to do it. Danny never lets me.
All right, off you go.
No, you do it.
See? Hello, and welcome to Chapter 17. I'm Danny Murray, as always. I'm joined with two great co-hosts. The messer in the chair, the one with the beard, the one that's wearing a deadly hat tonight, little bobble on it. All right, Graham.
Hey, Danny.
Mero Merrigan, what's the story?
Sensational.
You doing well?
Brilliant.
You look great.
Thank you. So do you.
Thanks
I like
much.
Your eyebrows, your cue.
I love how your hat matches your tracky top.
It does.
This is supposed to.
It's on point.
This tracky top came back into existence the last week because my mother hid it up in her room, as well as two other tops. When she goes out walking, she likes to take my tops and never puts them back.
I haven't seen
this top in about 2 years.
Jenza.
It's a true story.
You better be listening to us when you're out on your walks.
No, she doesn't listen.
Oh, a little dope.
Don't think so. She's a great woman.
I was going to say I'm going to break your windows, but then I'd be breaking your windows, Graham.
I needed...
That's not on.
I needed to get...
Yeah, that's housekeeping. We haven't introduced her yet.
Sorry, you're one.
Yeah.
Put one over here.
It's no guest this week, it's just us three, which means it's going to be kind of messier and sloppier because none of us will be behaving. And but we'll get on with it. Anyway, the one to my right, the one who was banned from the swingy chair. So she's on a permanent fixture of a chair this week that has no mobility in it whatsoever.
She'll still fall off it.
She probably will. She'll still do something to annoy me, no doubt about it.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah.
Anyway. Happy to be sitting beside you now.
Look, lads, if you're looking to get leaner, there's nobody keener to help you than Lindsay Danger Doyle.
Oh.
All right, Doyler.
I'm doing up a website at the minute and I need to hire you to help me.
Not a chance. I don't come cheap, love. I don't come cheap.
You have to rent them.
Client testimonials, but they won't be from either you two mom bags.
Here, hang on a second.
Hold on a minute
Hang on a second.
She's great, she's a bitch.
I'm not bringing this up again because we always do one of this.
It's like a broken record at this point.
But
I would,
hang on. Great at training on Tuesday.
I would just like to say, in terms of success stories or progress stories or whatnot, you've got a man who's got two guns so big they want to send them to Syria. And I've dropped more weight than the Titanic when it was sinking. So if you want testimonials on your website,
these are the guys.
You're going to have to go to the two best looking lads in all the border. We're winking at each other. That's not going to work over audio presentations.
All right, boys.
Anyway, absolutely. So, look, as always, do you know what? I'm going to bring in a new segment before housekeeping.
What?
Joke of the week.
Here we go. I don't have any.
It's all right. I've got one. I heard that on the way down. I had a good chuckle in
can
the car.
Rate them.
Yeah, absolutely can rate them, right? So, it's my turn this week. One of you will have to bring a joke to the table next week.
Right. I love laughing at my own jokes.
Brilliant. How do you split the Roman Empire?
How do you split the Roman Empire?
Yeah. With a pair of Caesars.
Jesus Christ.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Yes.
We'll take that.
Mr. Fanciulli, Classics 101, he'd be proud of me.
Here, people have to check out the BuzzFeed link that was sent to work today.
Which one was this?
Did you get it?
I don't know. What was it? I don't read emails.
It was like 24 things only British people understand. It was quite relevant to us, to Irish people as well.
Because we're technically British.
Shut up, you tick. It was just relevant. You have to ruin the story.
Sorry, no bother at all. So we're on to the section that I like to call housekeeping.
Have we got a song yet for it? We have to think of something.
No, that's why every week I'm trying to say housekeeping in a different way.
I think, what's that song that's on in Mrs. Doubtfire when Robin Williams is dancing around the house with the Hoover?
I don't know. I haven't watched Mrs. Doubtfire in years.
That would be a great song.
Do you reckon?
I don't know. Great film.
I better watch Mrs. Doubtfire and find out what song it is.
Thing on Netflix about him last night, actually. Documentary.
Robin Williams.
Wow, we'll be getting on. Jesus, will you calm down?
God bless him.
We haven't even done housekeeping. This one's jumping to go into our first topic.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't even thinking about that link
in
there.
For God's sake.
Jesus.
Shot a mad one. Mad eager. Anyway, yeah, so housekeeping. Doyler, I believe you have a bit of action over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm off to London for the London Open, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu London Open.
Tapping people out left, right and centre.
Hopefully. It's the biggest competition I've been in, Jiu-Jitsu.
Is this with your gi or without the gi?
Hey. I'm bringing my gi.
You're bringing your gi.
Never leave home without your gi, girls.
There's no gi for white belts over there, unfortunately, so I can just do gi. But the blue belts and above are all doing no gi as well.
So is the white belts beginner, is it?
Yeah, it's kind of... It's the first entry level.
How quickly do you progress to the next belt?
It depends on the instructor and how often you train and how good you are, you know.
There's no set time?
No.
It's just healing.
Generally, on average, people will be maybe getting their blue belt around two years of training.
2 years of training?
Yeah.
What?
So there's four stripes on your white belt. Well, anyway, in the system that we have that I'm part of, the Ribeiro Jiu-Jitsu, there's... So I have two stripes on my white belt, so I need to get two more, and then it'll be blue belt after that. But Jiu-Jitsu, they don't give belts out for free in Jiu-Jitsu. Like,
so you could be 50, and then you'll get your black belt?
Yeah. It takes 10 years or so, you know. Depends. Like, some people, like, say there's young lads there over in East Coast that train twice a day. So obviously they're going to get 2 years worth of training done in 1 year, whereas I train twice a week at most. So I'm not chasing belts in Jiu-Jitsu. I just want to get better at MMA, you know, so I just...
Yeah.
All this obviously would have viewed into you gave us some news there when we came in the door. You've got a bit of excitement on the horizon.
I'll be helping our guest of 2 weeks ago, the lovely Aisling Daly.
That the news or the other news?
This one's full of the news.
Yeah.
Housekeeping's pretty much all about Lindsay Doyle this week.
You're competing news.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Is it the 17th of November? It's 4 weeks, the European Amateur MMA Championships. I'm competing for Team Ireland on that.
For Team Ireland.
Yeah. Come on, Lindsay.
And people can watch that on UFC
Fight Pass. It's going to be on Fight Pass.
UFC Fight Pass, only $9.99 a month.
Or you can get it for 6 months at about €36.
Dana White, we're doing your advertising for you, son.
It's great. Love
deadly.
It.
So, Doyler, you're going to be on Fight Pass at the European Amateur MMA Championships. Absolutely head-kicking the bejesus out of some poor French board.
Yeah. So unless she's a wrestler, then I won't throw a head-kick at her.
Good point. Look at that. She's already solid.
So that's an amateur MMA fight?
Yeah, competition, yeah. So there could be...
Is it in a cage?
Yeah.
So this is your first taste of in a cage?
Yeah, it'll be my MMA debut.
Where's it on?
NEC in Birmingham.
Come on, the lads.
Yeah.
So there's a good crew going over. I can't wait. Be good. One part of me is like, could you not have just taken a fight on the show for your first fight to get it done? And then another part of me is like, I'm glad it's away and I'm glad it's a big thing because I could see myself going over and winning that, you know?
That's it.
Fighting talk.
Love it.
You better not come back here and say, oh, I didn't get out of the first round.
Yeah. So long as she didn't get out of the first round, her arms raised at the end of it. That's all I cared about.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, just your other bit of news is you, Ash Daly, as you said, your long-term training partner and whatnot.
Yeah, she's bringing me onto the stage with her for her weigh-in at the UFC Dublin next weekend.
Going to be packed out in the Tree Arena.
Did you guys get your tickets today from Ticketmaster?
Sure did. Yeah, well,
I don't think it's sold out, though.
No, well, there were still a few tickets left this evening anyway. Like, so, lads, well...
I might jump on and get a couple just to be safe in case anyone needs them for a bit of blackmail and stuff.
Oh, yeah, why not? Like, why not? They're free of charge anyway.
You just have to get them,
Just register them. What happened to those Fight Club members getting them? How come they did it this way around?
Don't know. To be honest, I really don't. Like, that's something you'd have to ask Fight Club.
Well, that's Jono.
Yeah, good point. Jono Murray. Jono the Encyclopedia Murray.
But the last UFC Dublin, I was at the weigh-in and I said to my housemate was with me. The next time the UFC's here, I'll be on that stage for the weigh-in, and I am gonna be, but not in the role I thought.
Yeah,
look, lads, progression.
Ask the universe, and it shall give.
That's it. Never stand still. Keep moving. Know what I mean?
You know, that tournament you're competing in, the Europeans.
IMAF. Yeah.
What's the next logical step after that? Would you be looking to fight at a regional show?
Well, yeah, well, hopefully. I just want to get a load of fights under my belt. Amateur, make all my mistakes at amateur before I turn pro, you know. Just rack up the experience. That's what I done when I started kickboxing. I just was, every weekend, I was just driving somewhere to fight in some show.
Just to get experience.
Just to get the ring time in, yeah. So.
Come here, when you were driving around places, did you read newspapers and all?
No.
No, so you didn't read The Independent and how good they are to bread?
Oh my God.
The bread trade.
The Independent. Single-handedly supporting old man Mr. Brennan, Pat the Baker.
I didn't even Johnston, read the article, Mooney, lads, and O'Brien. Afraid.
You know, so the way he's
hang
been
on. Hang, no, well, hang on. We'll set the background here. Lindsay was essentially called out on Twitter.
Right.
I would go so far as to say almost cyber bullied.
So by who?
On the Twitter.
But before we go into Messer the detail Mackle. Of that, how proud are you of my interaction on the Twitter?
To be honest with you, I'm even amazed that you turned up on the Twitter.
Because I got about 7 text messages, because Twitter texts, you know, to let you know if you have a tweet where they text me.
I have had notifications turned off.
They're called push notifications, Lindsay.
But,
they don't text you.
Did you know, right? Twitter texts?
Wait, hold on there. This is Twitter HQ. Let's text Lindsay and let her know.
Lindsay, check onto your Twitter there. Because I don't even have the app on my phone, so I have to go in on Safari.
Ah, here.
Then I went in and I was like, all this talk about this thing, and I kept going to where the article was, and I couldn't. I was like, where's the link to the article? So eventually I found the link to the article.
So Gary called you.
And I was thinking, Danny's going to be so proud of me.
Yeah. So essentially she got called out on Twitter, boys.
So Gary likes bread.
Was it Garmack or Dean Doyle who started it?
No, Gary Mackle started and Dean Doyle rode in behind Gary Mackle. And at that point I was like, this turned into cyberbullying. One more person, lads, and we have an incident. So I quickly went to defuse the situation by making a light joke, saying how Lindsay was now in Independent News and Media's headquarters, leg kicking and head kicking the bejesus out of everybody. Poor old Dennis O'Brien didn't know what was going on. But then in steps Doyler herself, saying, you know what, Murray, I got this. I don't need you fighting my battles for me. I know how to work Twitter on Safari. I don't have the app. It's the year 2015. I don't have the app, but I have Safari.
And what was the article about?
Saying how bread not being healthy and not being good for you is a myth.
It was like 10 or 12 myths about bread revealed or some shy.
Exactly.
What were some of the myths?
I have different levels of infuriation from articles from the Indo. Do you remember the one about the female rugby?
Oh, that was a horrendous article.
That's the most infuriated the Indo has made me. But this was close behind. So there was, the first reason was because if you want to get tested for celiac disease and haven't been eating gluten, the tests can be inconclusive.
Yeah.
So if you think you have a gluten intolerance, whatever you do, for the love of God, don't stop eating gluten, because it makes it hard for us to test you.
What they might as well have said there is, while we're doing that, a little bit of advice. If you haven't been sleeping with hookers, don't get tested for crabs, because, you know, it'll be harder to find the crabs.
Yeah. Literally, if
you haven't been riding the hookers. And come here, if you have any big sporting occasions coming up or a parole here and you need to get drug tested, probably have a dose of heroin, because otherwise they won't find it in you. Get out there and ruin some spoons, people of the Dublin.
Oh.
So.
And then on the topic of drugs, they said there was another beautiful statistic. I'd love to get it up, but anyway. Something about bread provides 10% of the fibre that Irish people eat.
Love now, a bit of fibre.
I'm pretty sure a similar statistic in the lines of cocaine provides 10% of the stimulants Irish people take could be said. That's not to say there isn't less addictive and more legal stimulants like caffeine. It's the same with fibre. Get your fibre from vegetables. 10% of Irish people are getting their fibre from bread because they won't eat any vegetables. That doesn't mean they should definitely eat bread. They should eat vegetables.
It's true. I'd probably be inclined to say, yeah. Like, I know an awful lot of people that wouldn't look twice at a few carrots and a bit of broccoli, but you put a slice of batch loaf in front of them to go through you for it.
You know when you're sick, do you ever, like, not have a bit of white toast?
Oh, you need that. White toast and a cup of tea, a cup of milky tea. Tea.
Milk and tea would make me sick.
Get out.
would you not just, like, a bit of comfort of white bread and spread toasted?
No, the only time I'd say that I would
need that in your life. You need
a bit of ham, sliced cheddar.
The only time I'd say that I would sometimes be like, oh, I wouldn't mind a slice of bread, is if I'm having a bowl of soup. And yeah, I'd like to butter some bread and dip it into the soup.
Anybody who eats soup without bread needs to get a passport and get off this island right now.
I had soup earlier with chicken thighs on the side for my lunch. bowl of vegetable soup with two chicken thighs.
What's wrong with that?
What do you mean, what's wrong with that?
There was no bread. That's what's wrong with it for
them. Right. What are you going to do? Dip in two thighs to your soup?
Is that what you did?
No, I just ate them while I was eating the soup because I needed protein.
I have complained in restaurants when I have not been furnished with bread and I've ordered soup. Because I'm
habitual. Love the bread in restaurants with soup.
A good bread soda at bread. Weddings. A good soda bread.
The bread at weddings before the soup.
Tell it. Do you know where you get the best soup? Funerals.
Soup? Yeah, funeral soup.
It doesn't matter what flavour it is, but funeral soup. May the Lord rest whoever it is passed away.
I want to see if I can get this article.
Love it. Now we're moving on. I don't care that much about it. I just want to. Don't scratch your beard at the microphone, Graham.
Sorry.
Every week. It's infuriating me.
We need to just shave it off.
Oh, you and your beard knits.
Sorry.
Every week. Beard knits. Luigi Malone's in Temple Bar and Conyers Zoo. I was in there and I got a bowl of soup. Lovely soup, but no bread.
Toblerone cheesecake there.
Who's eating cheesecake?
Toblerone cheesecake.
Nobody. Who's eating cheesecake? I love a bit of Toblerone. Like, you try keep me away from a bit of Toblerone. I've shut down airports to get Toblerones.
Why Toblerone? Massive.
Toblerone is a thing. No. I eat Toblerone. Myself and my granddad have a thing about Toblerone whereby he is a chair in my grandparents' living room and he always has a little Toblerone inside the chair.
Brilliant.
And we have this thing where I come in and have a chat to him and then when I'm gone, he's like, come here. And he gives me one thing of Toblerone.
What triangle?
And gives me a kiss and says, I'll see you Christmas.
That's so good.
Every time. Yeah.
So, why Christmas?
Because it's just a thing he always says, I'll see you Christmas, even though I see him twice a week. Like, what?
He gives you one
when
help.
We're leaving. And then he says, I see you Christmas, and I say, nah, be the new year. And then that's it, I go.
Do you know what's amazing about Toblerones?
I love traditions like that.
Besides the fact that they're all perfectly aligned like the Alps, because the Alps are dead straight mountains. that's how mountains work. They all form perfectly in an isosceles triangle. But in the Toblerone crest, there's a bear.
Is it?
You look closely at the Toblerone crest. While you're listening, lads, get Google open away for you. And just have a look at the Toblerone crest there, see if you can see the bear.
People going, oh yeah,
you will. People will be looking at it. Tweet us when you find it.
My old housemate Doug Leonard, good old Dougie, used to, every time I came home from a major championship, so Worlds or Euros, he would have a white chocolate Toblerone waiting for me.
Brilliant.
What a man.
I'm googling Toblerone.
He's going to have a look there to see if he can find the secret bear, the Toblerone bear.
But anyway, bread is as nutrient dense as a sock. So if you're choosing your food based on nutrients to fuel your body, you can get fiber and protein that you will find in bread in much better antioxidant-rich foods.
There we go. The health guru letting you know what it's... I'm distracted by Graham trying to spot the bear.
Oh, yeah.
There he goes. There he goes. He's seen the bear.
That's deadly, isn't it?
It's good, isn't it?
It's just a little silhouette.
Just a little silhouette of a bear.
Scalamuse,
can you do
that?
The fandango? Thunderbolt tonight. Very, very
How did you ever notice that?
Graham, you don't get to this size without eating a few Toblerones and staring longingly at an empty Toblerone
and
box.
And he has a fetish about bears. So.
Vision, love bears. Polar bears. Love polar bears.
I like little things, geeky things like
you
that.
You need that, don't you? You need them in your life.
Do you like the fruit and nut Toblerones?
Sorry?
That's a no.
I didn't even know such
a
thing existed.
Sick freak.
Or the white one. The white chocolate.
Fruit and nuts do not belong in chocolate.
White chocolate. Yeah. The white chocolate one.
The white chocolate one. I'm
there's not
over.
Enough white chocolate.
There's not enough white chocolate in the world.
I was looking for white chocolate about 3 years ago.
White
chocolate Toblerone?
I just haven't eaten chocolate in 3 years.
I want to know what sort of sick animal when they're going through an airport and you see that delightful sign that says 3 Toblerones for €9 and you're stocking up on 27 of them. I want to know what sick animal picks up the dark chocolate Toblerone.
Oh yeah. What? Even the packet's rotten.
You need to seriously look at your
Austin
life choices, man.
That. He's like, he gets excited about dark chocolate as if
you,
it's milk
you
chocolate.
You need to have a word with him. You
I
need
don't,
to sit,
we,
sit him
it's
down.
It's good because if he has dark chocolate in the house, I'm just not even.
There's dark chocolate Kit Kats out now. No time for dark
there
chocolate.
There was nothing but disappointment in my life. In the old school days when tins of roses were fantastic. And you'd get to the Tin of Roses and all that we left would be a dirty Bourneville.
Oh, Bourneville.
Dirty Bourneville.
You'd be going mad.
Lads, I feel like I'm losing control of this
conversation. I'd rather open the Tin of Roses and see a knitting needle and thread.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah,
at least then, bloody Bourneville.
At least then, you know, when you've burst the crotch of your trousers, they're going to be repaired. But an old Bourneville, that's gonna do nothing for you, man. Do you know what I mean?
They're rotten. Are they still in it, Bourneville?
No idea. Tins are always going to shy. Not even tins anymore. That's some rubbery, manky substance.
Oh, yeah, it is. This it's the plastic.
This is making me excited for Christmas, lads.
Lads, stop
Christmas.
It. Shops have Christmas decorations up already.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Mental carry on. I've seen selection boxes in Tesco. Selection. We're in October. Selection boxes.
We should do a Halloween episode, actually.
Ferrero Rocher.
Get someone scary. Oh,
there's real Christmassy.
Stop, right, let's zone it in.
Yeah,
sorry. Stop this.
We've done 20 minutes of housekeeping. That's probably the longest housekeeping ever.
Yeah.
That's great. Did any of you watch the, I'm just saying this purely because you're in a chair, like, did you see the thing on TV3 last week?
I meant to watch that.
Rugby wheelchair challenge.
Yeah,
thing.
I watched it, yeah, I watched it.
Felix Jones.
I watched it on the Three Player, actually.
Later. Yeah, it's on, actually, yeah, it is. It's on the TV3 Player online. Check it out. It's basically, I can't remember the name of the chap who got the injury. He got a spinal injury. He fell off a bale of hay and broke his neck or something like that. And basically he issued a challenge to a couple of rugby players to say if they could, just using public transport, get a wheelchair from the Aviva Stadium in Dublin to Thomond Park, home of Munster Rugby in Limerick.
It was like a relay, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it started off with Jamie Heaslip in the Aviva, and Jamie had to get from there to, I think it was Houston Station, using just public transport and a wheelchair. And then Shane Bourne took over from there and had to get to Portlaoise, and from Portlaoise to, I can't remember where, it was former Ireland player David Wallace. And then Felix Jones, local lad, Sea Point legend, Felix.
Yeah.
He took over then. Felix Jones, about, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, it might have been longer.
2008, actually, was it?
Was it 2008 that long ago, was it? He broke his neck in a rugby match. It wasn't a bad tackle or nothing, just kind of innocuous.
He went in head first,
kind of innocuous, like, and I'm very lucky to not only be able to play rugby now, but I mean even walk or whatever. Yeah. Like, he's very, very lucky to be able to. And he's made a full recovery. And he's
now director as well as Spinal Injuries Ireland, so that's probably why he got involved in the documentary.
But it was very good, and it just raised an awful lot of good points, I thought.
Was it,
like,
just the one episode? Or is
yeah,
it
yeah, just one. Just one.
I watched it. It was good. Kind of disappointed of the scheduling of it. Like 10:30 on a Friday evening.
On a Friday
evening,
yeah.
I mean, whether we like to have been or not, when the Late Late Show is the most watched television show on a Friday
night. It's not only that, I just think TV3 missed a beat there. They have exclusive rights in Ireland for the Rugby World Cup at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, we need to talk about that, actually. Sorry, we'll jump back to that after this. Exclusive rights to the Rugby World Cup in Ireland at the moment. And like that schedule on 10:30 of a Friday. Why not put it on
after
a
match,
put it on before a match?
Before a match or in between a match or whatever.
Yeah.
It was all right. I don't know whether... I didn't think it was brilliant. I know.
I thought it was very good now. Because like, even from my point of view, when I used to work for my dad and I'd be doing deliveries, like, I'd be in white lightning in the van. And I just landed up in a curb and I wouldn't have thought twice of what if somebody in a wheelchair.
Would you stop doing that now?
I would have thought
because
maybe.
Of the documentary?
Yeah, I would actually, yeah. I'd now start to say to myself, all right, look, just wait a couple of minutes, find a loading bay or find an alternative place to park here because this isn't going to work for.
If they wouldn't fit on passes, they'd have to go onto the road to go around.
And it's dangerous. Like, I might have thought once or twice, like, what if somebody with a pram? But I'll be honest, like, and even though I've known you since forever, like a wheelchair never would have popped into my head, which is completely selfish on my behalf.
Yeah.
But it's mad that I took a TV show.
That's mad, though, because some of my close friends would probably, like you are a close friend, would never consider that because you probably don't consider me a wheelchair user.
Yeah. But that's,
which is gas. Yeah, and I'm like, no, lads, I
have. Yeah,
know,
no, it's mad, the little things
that
you don't.
When you're interacting with other people and I see them being a bit cautious about whatever they're doing with you or what they might say to you, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, give me stickies.
Yeah, it's only narrow, like.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of the documentary, I don't know what, like, because Jamie Heaslip, I follow him on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And
I know Jamie Heaslip.
He's quite, he uses social media a lot.
Very savvy.
I didn't see him mention anything about this documentary.
Ah, no, he did, in fairness.
Did he?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I could be wrong.
But, in his defence as well, you have to remember, he's currently embedded in Irish World Cup camp.
Yeah.
And it was the build-up to the biggest game.
Well, then that leads back to my scheduling.
Scheduling. No, I 100% agree with you, but I will say, in fairness to him, during this World Cup, he's been on Facebook doing Q&As and doing little live videos and that kind of thing, and in fairness, I did see a couple of mentions.
Yeah.
Of this on his timeline, I've seen Shane Bourne tweet about it quite heavily as well.
I just don't know what is it going to do. Like, we know Temple Bar's up to its tits and cobblestones of being in Temple Bar, you know. I can't decide whether I liked it or whether I felt it was a bit patronising.
Right.
I was just going to ask you there, what would you have liked it to gone further into some things, or what's the disappointment?
I don't know. Like, there was a bit where Felix Jones was getting up on a curb and he couldn't do the wheelie to get up on the curb and he fell on his back.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then there's in that same part, he was saying, I have to go all the way around, I have to go 20 yards around the corner to get the slope. So it didn't have to do a wheelie and I wouldn't have fell on me back. And I'm kind of just going, like, I would have just been able to get up on that.
Oh, yeah, a wheelchair user would be able for that.
An experienced wheelchair user would have been.
An experienced wheelchair user would have been able to do it.
I think, outside the schedule, I think the only kind of drawback I had was, it seemed a bit rushed. It was only a half hour long.
Yeah.
It was only half an hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they were documenting the journey.
Well, less than half an hour with the ads.
Yeah, exactly, And they were documenting the journey from the Aviva Stadium to Yoke. So at points it seemed like literally, you know, there was a point they got on a train. And it seemed like the train journey was 2.5 seconds long.
Well, that
seems a bit like it was to be a highlight reel between a news broadcast or something.
Yeah. But I don't know what the follow-up is or what they're going to do. Or, like, is it just a show? If it was just a show to highlight, it's silly that with In-Road Éireann, you have to book a carriage 24 hours in advance. You know, those things and all are silly. When I was living in Australia, in Brisbane, you had to book public transport buses 24 hours in advance.
It's serious?
Yeah. That was in, 2008. Could change now, but when I was living over there, you had to book a bus or hope that a bus would show up. Sometimes over here, like the air coach, it was interesting actually on that documentary because they showed, was it David Wallace?
Wallace was on the bus. Yeah.
Wallace was on the bus and it showed how the coach lift works. Now, if I'm going away on holidays and I've tried to get the air coach, the lads have had to lift me up into the air coach, which is fine to them. But there's been times where I wanted to use the lift and didn't have to rely on the lads.
Yeah.
And the driver was like, oh no, it's not working this morning. It's not working. That's happened just, 2 or 3 times. And they're just not arsed to do it because I rang the air coach. Barry rang the air coach before we went away one time and said, oh, we're going to be getting on down at the Silver Tassie at this time. Yeah, that's no bother. All our coaches have a lift. That's fine. Mm. And then, no, sorry, it's not working today. And it is working. He just doesn't want to get out.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
You know, it was good in the sense where it showed ridiculousness of, oh my God, a wheelchair user has to ring there in 24 hours. Yeah. I wouldn't technically speaking, I wouldn't be able to just wake up on a Saturday morning and say,
I'm going
to
hop on a train.
I'm going to hop on a train down to Limerick. You have to tell them 24 hours before.
Yeah, spontaneity.
Look, I think it was decent overall. But look, anyway, let's check it out on TV3 Player. And it'll be there anyway. Rugby Wheelchair Challenge, I think it's called. But speaking of rugby, we'll just briefly touch on it because I think it would be ill befitting of a legend if we didn't bring it up. Lindsay pretty much watched her first rugby game at the weekend. And she's a pox.
She's a pox.
Our first rugby match, and it ends the international career of one of Ireland's greatest leaders. A man who, had he been in the GPO 99 years ago, the budget would have needed to give 200 million to commemorate it, never mind 50. Paul O'Connell. It's emotional.
He was retiring after this.
This was his swan song.
I thought you were going to say he's retiring anyway.
This was his last bow out in the green jersey, but now that he pretty much tore his hamstring off the bone, which is a disgusting injury.
He looked to be in a lot of pain.
Yeah, sure. He was on the oxygen.
Yeah. Look, lads. We'll talk briefly about the football as well, right? But he's putting beard oil in. My Jesus. Is it that itchy that you have to put oil in it?
It's not oil, it's moisturizer.
It needs a trim.
Doesn't it? It got a trim on Saturday.
My God. That's why I wouldn't want a beard, because that's too much work.
You wouldn't want a beard?
It's too much
You'd
work.
Love a beard.
I don't think I would love you a would. Beard.
You told me before that you'd love a beard, but and just now, can't grow one.
Yeah, I can't. I get Amish beard. But now I'm looking at you and I'm like, you look like you're in distress over there with that thing, man.
Not at all. I feel great.
But anyway, look, Paul O'Connell, it's... it was a great result, unbelievable result what happened. And Ian Madigan coming off, he injured Johnny Sexton. And
look, it was a great match.
Madigan had a great game, Madigan, from what I know, my limited knowledge.
He had a couple of hairy moments, but overall, I think he came on and showed that he is able to step up and play test rugby. I think overall, that second 40 minutes of rugby was probably the best 40 minute performance I've seen out of any Irish team in any sport ever.
Any Irish team in any sport ever.
That
puts the high things up there, Danny.
No, but hang on a second. That puts into context. Think about this for a second, lads. We're talking about a World Cup match. We're talking about your leader, your catalyst, your absolute, the man you would turn to in any hour of need. And he cannot walk off the pitch at halftime. Johnny Sexton, your playmaker, your kicker, everything in rugby goes through the 10 channel. And Johnny Sexton's taken off after 25 minutes. You've got Ian Madigan coming on with
Peter O'Mahony.
Peter O'Mahony didn't get injured as well. Like, you're talking three players there that are the fulcrum of not just Ireland, but any team that they're in. That Peter O'Mahony's the captain of Munster. Johnny Sexton was everything at Racing Metro. When Metro were still dirt, they were dirt when he was there, and they're dirt after he's gone, but whatever. He's back at Leinster now, where he belongs, and I couldn't be happier about that. And it's vital for Leinster that he is. But you look at the Irish setup, without Sexton, there's always question marks. You look at O'Connell in any situation, there's a reason the greatest club in the world, Toulon, are paying a lot of money for Paul O'Connell to go there.
Still go ahead. 35.
Yeah, it will.
Because they're talking about him being out for 5 or 6 months.
That won't matter to them. It's a 2-year contract.
Oh, is it 2 years?
He's still a marquee signing for them.
In relation to...
I just want to say, based on all that adversity, and then to face up to the pressure in a place like the Millennium Stadium.
It was unbelievable.
And absolutely demolish what is a very good French team. Even under Philippe Saint-André, who's an absolute clown, they've still got players in there who are world-class. And Ireland absolutely trounced them, and that is amazing.
I thought they'd win by 4, but
yeah,
they absolutely dominated.
I was hoping they'd win by 20, because the statistic I heard earlier on in the day that the last 3 times the French had beaten them by 20 or something like that.
What? Not even close, pal.
No?
No, France haven't beaten us in like 5 years.
Oh.
That was a 3 in a row we beat
them. Yeah, that's the first time in a while we've done 3 in a row against them. I think since the 60s and 70s. We drew with them twice. And then we beat them twice, and the other day was the third time.
You're talking about water polo?
Could have been.
Come here and I ask you about next week's match.
You mean this week's match when this podcast calls there?
Oh, yeah. Tonight's match.
Oh, yeah, tonight's match. Argentina.
The Argentina match.
Yeah.
Although Madigan came on to replace the injured Johnny Sexton, there's talk of Paddy Jackson playing if Sexton.
I don't, if
Sexton is ruled out, there's talk of Paddy Jackson.
I like Paddy Jackson, I really do, but I think against the Argentinians, you need somebody who's going to go at a team, and I think Ian Madigan's the type of player who'll go at them.
Okay,
whereas Jackson isn't. Don't get me wrong, I like Jackson. He's a very, very good player, very good dead ball kicker as well.
Yeah.
But I would rather see Madigan play. I'd rather see Madigan off Conor Murray if Sexton isn't going to play.
And it was Super Sunday, and it didn't end that well with the Irish lads.
It was such an anti-climax. After the rugby going so well, it was such
after beating Germany, the rugby going so well.
It was such an anti-climax. And then, you know what really
very disappointing.
Really killed me as well. Like you've seen them rugby players literally get absolutely... I just want to actually say as well, the lads, the level of injuries in rugby is not sustainable.
Yeah.
For lads to have a professional career, any kind of life after rugby, the injuries and the hits they are taking at the moment... It's not sustainable. The world rugby needs to look at this.
Absolutely.
Genuinely needs to look at it. There's lads literally creaking as they walk as a result. But anyway, when you see those hits...
People have been saying that Argentina, it'll be a very physical match. We're already 3 men down?
4, including Jared Payne.
And then if we go forward and have a physical match, even if we win, we might pick up some more injuries.
Wales have withdrawn about 10 players.
But you see, here's the interesting thing. Northern Hemisphere teams are struggling. Like France had Uge gone in the very first game. England have had their struggles. Wales have been absolutely decimated by injuries. Scotland are missing a couple of players or two. You look at all the Northern Hemisphere teams, they've all been hit by injury. Ireland, fair enough, were lucky up until the France match, but now they're blighted by it. Whereas you look at the Southern Hemisphere teams, clean bill of health pretty much across the board. The only problems they've had is with discipline, with like Michael Hooper with Australia getting cited. And it just goes to show the different style of rugby. The Southern Hemisphere still sees rugby as a game of intelligence. And again, they've got boshers. Like, they've got, like, Man Onu for the All Blacks. Do you know what I mean? You've got Dwayne Vermeulen for South Africa, David Pocock for Australia. You've still got big, big guys, big, big hitters. But the point is, they play intelligent rugby. They don't just look to get the ball into the big lads and run Warren Gatland style, if you will. You know, and that's...
Is their training any different? Do you think their strength and conditioning, their prehab?
I honestly don't know a whole lot about that in terms of what different countries would have. I know in terms of Ireland and in terms of Leinster, they're very, very particular about their pre-game training and their prehab and all that kind of thing. They didn't do, like England, for example, went to Denver for altitude training so that they'd be pumped up and all this kind of stuff, and they'd have more red blood cells, whatever it is, more oxygen in the blood.
That went well for them, didn't it?
Went great. Sean O'Brien's sighting hearing
was longer than England's World Cup.
Longer than England's World Cup. England's World Cup, lads, 320 minutes. Sean O'Brien's sighting hearing, 370-something. So Sean O'Brien spent longer in front of a sighting commissioner than England did in their own World
there
Cup.
There was four hearings going at the same time, though, wasn't
doesn't
it?
Matter. Still hilarious. So I don't really know about other teams and what they have in terms of their strength and conditioning and that, but what... It's the style of rugby. It's the way it's played. It's not as attritional in the Southern Hemisphere. It might be more physical and powerful, but it's done in a way where they look for the offload a lot more. They don't just take it into contact. They play running rugby a lot more.
It's controlled aggression as opposed to blanket aggression.
To an extent, yeah. It's not like a lot of it. If you watch, the perfect example would be Wales versus Australia this weekend. No, Wales aren't playing Australia. Sorry, Wales, South Africa this weekend. Wales will look to get the ball to their big centres. Jamie Roberts being a perfect example. He was a big, big guy. They looked to get the ball to him. He looked to carry it straight into the contact, get a couple of yards over the game line, hit the ground, recycle the ball. They looked to get it to the next big guy, George North. He'll do the same. And they'll just look to run at them and run at them and run at them. South Africa are a big, strong, physical unit. You're not going to be able to do that against South Africans come off the better. South Africa will absolutely go through these guys. You know? Yeah. And that's... The difference being that if you look at the end of this game, who's going to be more physically spent? It's going to be Wales, I think. Like, the only Northern Hemisphere team that will go through in this round is Ireland. Wales will go out, Scotland will go out, France will go out. New Zealand will be France, no bother. Australia, I said, are going to win the whole thing. They'll go through Scotland for fun, and Ireland should beat the Argies.
It's better. Right, back to the...
back to the football.
The people sport. The people's sport, the number one sport in the country.
Peasant sport.
The number one supported sport in the country.
That's fast waning, might I add.
It's what?
Fast waning.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means it's dwindling. It's dwindling, man. But the support for football
hasn't dwindled yet. That was, as you said, it was very anti-climax. I thought they were just going to go all guns blazing, considering we'd nothing to lose. We've made the playoff.
They should have. They bloody well should have. They should have. They should have just played a formation of 2-9.
Yeah.
Literally. Darren Randolph should have played centre forward. John O'Shea should have played sweeper, keeper. Last man back, like when you're 12 playing 3-8 or whatever.
2-9.
That's what they should have done.
They should have. They should have just went all out, but Richard Keogh's miss at the end of 5 minutes to go.
John O'Shea getting sent off for being a tick.
Yeah, but Brady kind of...
Brady had an awful game.
Yeah, he did, unfortunately.
And this is... Sorry, what I was going to say before we start getting me sidetracked with rugby as well, if you look at some of those lads who are falling on the ground with the merest touch and rolling around and crying, Lewandowski was at it all night.
All night.
And then you look
Didn't even get booked.
I know. And then you look at the hits those rugby lads are taking and getting straight back up. And this is why football is dwindling.
It's just the respect...
Pathetic.
Yeah, but rugby is a full-contact sport. Yeah. Football's a non-contact sport. So
well, football's not supposed to be a non-contact sport. It's a tackling sport. You still get tackled. You still have tackled shoulders. You still...
Football, I think, will always be the number one sport as well.
No, look, it probably will be. But the simple fact... Actually, Paddy Hewlin tweeted that at the weekend. I thought it was a very fair point. When we were younger, you looked out in the field and you see kids just playing football.
Yeah.
You look out in the field now and you see kids wrestling. You see kids practicing jiu-jitsu. Like, they don't know what they're doing, but that
I don't see that.
And you see kids playing rugby. I see it all the time.
I don't see that.
You look out in the field in Cromlock Fields beside the Cromlock man. You see
kids doing jiu-jitsu on the field. Stop the lights.
Hang on a second. You do so. Yeah,
no, they're not. Show me where that's happening.
You see arm bars. You see chokes. They don't know that's what they're doing, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hang on a second. They're emulating what they're seeing on TV and they're doing it. Now, granted, it's not exactly safe. They could be popping elbows and not realising it. But that's what they're doing, and then they're going home to their man, their dads, and they're going to be like, I want to be the next Conor McGregor, I want to be Ronda Rousey, I want to be fucking Robbie Lawler.
I don't see that happening.
You know what I mean? You need to look out your window more, son.
No, I do. I drive around. I don't see any kids doing that. They might be doing it in organised, kind of facilitated places like a gym or something like that.
I see more oval balls getting thrown around rather than roundy balls getting kicked around.
I see more Gaelic footballs and hurley sticks than I do Soccer balls or rugby balls.
Hurley sticks stand out a lot more.
Huh?
Hurley sticks stand out a lot more.
But that I see them more.
Yeah, that's right. Like,
and I see, I don't agree with that though. I don't see kids giving arm bars to each other and tapping each other out. I don't see Herb Dean in the middle.
Herb Dean in the middle of the mall. I see Johnny the Knacker officiating a game or two. Yeah. What I mean? Up, Johnny, you mad thing.
Yeah. I seen in the rugby match a lot of double leg takedowns.
Yeah, you will see a lot of
double legs. There was a lot of wrestling and judo going on in the rugby.
Absolutely, yeah.
Couple of body shots thrown in as well, I've seen.
I was going to say Sean O'Brien with a vicious body shot.
Sean O'Brien with a nice little hook to the body there.
Yeah,
29 seconds in.
Animal.
Beautiful.
After he got poked up the hole.
So he's...
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
So I was wondering what was going on. That
got the whole oil check, as they would call it.
You got oil checked up the anus.
Yeah. So, anyway, look, Ireland beat Argentina. That's basically
and we'll be wherever we get in the football will hopefully get hungry and beat them.
The Irish soccer team just seem to play to the standard of the team they're playing. So Germany are the world champions, so Ireland stepped up, played well, beat them.
They didn't play well though against Germany.
They should have went through Poland and they did not.
Yeah. Should have marched on Poland.
Eternally disappointed by the Irish football
team. We didn't play well against Germany. They dominated possession. We just caught them out.
No, hang on.
We did better. We did better. Yeah. We did better, but we by no means dominated the game.
But we're not a team that's capable of dominating.
I know. I agree.
You know, especially against the Third Reich.
But it's the argument I'm sick of hearing is that we don't have the players who are not good enough. How the hell did Northern Ireland top their group? How did Iceland top their group?
None of the lads.
Do you know what I mean? Northern Ireland, the population of 300,000-400,000.
Brilliant.
Iceland, the population of 500,000.
Brilliant.
You know, that's my point.
Grand, Tom. Come here to me. Do you know what I've been doing a lot lately? Watching a fierce amount of documentaries, lads.
Really?
It seems to be a new hobby where, like, because look.
Any downtime, you just stick on a documentary?
Yeah, I'm sick of watching Sky and there being nothing on. I'm sick of reruns of, like, Pawn Stars and all that. You know what I mean?
You've watched them all. Exactly. And when we went to Pawn Stars.
I refused to watch Pawn Stars. Now when I turn on.
I haven't watched it since we went and got disappointed.
And I'm even more disappointed now. When I turn on History Channel, I want to watch history. I don't want to watch some chap trying to sell an Elvis record.
When you know that's not what happens.
That's not how it works. The magic is gone from me. You know what I mean? So I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately.
Where do you watch them? Do you watch them on Sky, like, or do you watch them on Netflix?
No. I watch Netflix or, you know, there's other websites in this world that their legality may be questionable. But they're providing a service to me. You know what I mean?
Like?
Put Locker.
Yeah.
Or there's a great documentary.
What is it? Put Locker? P-U-T Locker?
Yeah. P-U-T-T Locker. Great website.
There's a website as well that I use. I can't remember what it's called. It's like Documentary Hub or something like that.
Yeah, or topdocs.com, I think was the other one you see. But look, unbelievable. So I've been mad with documentaries lately, right? And I was watching one. It's called Red Army. Now, this is coming out in cinemas over here in England, but it's been out in America for the last year, I want to say. And essentially what it's about is the Soviet Union hockey team. The 1970s, 1980s, up until the early 90s when the Soviet Union said, nah, we're out, good luck, good boy, we're not Soviets anymore. And it focuses from the point of view of their captain, a guy called Fedosov, who went on to play for the Detroit Red Wings. Anybody who has any interest in ice hockey will love it. Even if you don't have any interest in ice hockey, you'll still appreciate it, because ice hockey is a sport of kings. I love it, man. It's unbelievable. But this documentary basically focuses on the dominance of the Soviet Union team in terms of ice hockey, like, and then the struggle for them players to actually go and play and get paid. Like, they got 30, when they were playing for the Soviet Union. Soviet Union was basically a country and a club, if that makes sense. And when they were playing for the Soviet Union, they get 30 days a year off. Other than that, every single day was spent in a camp. God. They weren't allowed to go home, weren't allowed to visit family, weren't allowed to visit them.
Were they enjoying it, like?
To an extent.
Yeah.
But that's like, and they all talk.
Does the documentary show them enjoying it?
Yeah. It shows them talking about it. It shows them in camp and it shows footage of them, you know. I can't remember the coach's name. The coach was an awful bollocks. And, it's just, it's mad, like, because it's a completely different way of it. But there's a point where they're shown 1980 Winter Olympics, famous ice hockey match where the Americans beat the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union were, like, seen as best in the world, unstoppable, amazing. And that year in the Winter Olympics, the American team was just a bunch of lads out of college, no professionals, amateurs. They were given no chance at all. They won the match 4-3, and it's called the Miracle on Ice. There's documentaries about that match alone, never mind that else, right? And president at the time, Jimmy Carter, makes a big speech and all about it. And him and the coach then make this declaration about how this match is proof that the American way of life is better than the communist way of
no
life.
Way.
No way. That's how much propaganda was behind all this stuff. Oh, like, it's crazy, man, right? So you have all that going on. But then the captain, Fedosov, it gets to the point where...
You're not going to spoil that now, are
you? No, I'm not. No, not at all, no. This guy, Fedosov, by the way, is now the Minister for Sport in Russia. He's now a politician. But in fairness, he talks very openly about how terrible it was for them, like, and how much he hated it and everything. Like, so he's talking about that and he's saying, like, I got offered a contract to go play in the NHL in America. And at the time, the Soviet Union was starting to collapse. So I went and met with the ministry and they were like, look, Slava, we really like you. You're the captain. We want to make you a deal. Go play in America. You can take 10% of your contract. We'll take the rest.
Oh.
And he was like, no. They were like, look, you're the captain. That's a good deal. Take it. He was like, no. And they're like, right, you're never playing hockey again. Like, all right, fair enough. So he couldn't even go into ice rinks. Anywhere in Russia he'd go, people would just say, sorry, we can't let you in. Sorry.
And they
wouldn't look at him. They'd look down at the ground. Because this man was a national hero. Like, he was on stamps and everything. He was a hero with the Soviet Union. Like,
wasn't allowed to play hockey.
Like, look him up. I swear to God. Slava Fedosov is his name. You should see his role of honor. Like, he's like the honor of Lenin. He's got like 15. The honor of Lenin was like the highest yoke you could get in the Soviet Union. Like, fucking hockey player of the year. Fucking hockey hall of fame. All these things. Like, and he's just banished and told, no, sorry, get out. Like, so it's mad. And then it documents like his struggle in trying to actually get back into hockey. And in the end, then, you had all these other hockey players who effectively defected from the Soviet Union, denounced their passports and said, nah, we're done, we're out, escaped to Sweden, and from Sweden got to America, played hockey in America. Then you have others then who...
escaped? So...
They defected, like...
When they were playing for the Soviet Union, were they being paid at all?
Yeah, like, they were being looked after. Like, do you know what I mean?
Food and board, like...
Kind of, yeah. Like, I can't really remember from watching it if they were given... large amount of money. One of the things that does show was that they'd go on to play exhibition matches against Canadian teams and about American teams. And when they go away, like, they'd go on shopping sprees. But the KGB would be with them. And the KGB would be like, you've bought enough. Stop bringing that back into our country. Because you couldn't buy Levi jeans in Russia. You couldn't buy Wrangler jeans. Do you know what I mean? All this kind of stuff. So they'd be... And textiles in Russia, it's a poor industry. They're all about, you know... bigger and better than just textiles. You don't get cloud manufacturers and all that kind of thing.
That is crazy. So,
unbelievable documentary though, man. Highly recommend it.
How did you come across it?
I seen an ad for it on Facebook. And I was like, I like ice hockey. I'll give that a look.
Yeah.
It turned out to be slightly different than the direction I wanted to go. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
I was expecting it to be one thing. It turned out to be something else. But the something else it turned into was amazing.
And do you watch NHL? Like,
yeah, I'd watch it a bit, yeah.
It's on every week, isn't it?
Most weeks, yeah. You have to stay. It's usually on ESPN.
At least
it used to be. Like, but you have to kind of stay up to watch it. I'd usually tend to just catch highlights of games online. Like,
yeah.
Is the ESPN that do those 30 for 30 documentaries?
Yeah, love them.
They're brilliant.
So I'd watch them. I'd watch the highlights on that. I'd watch a bit of the NHL and watch a bit of the KHL as well. That's the Russian Hockey League, like, because they're probably the two best. So, and then when the Winter Olympics is on, you can't get me away from the telly. Love the Winter Olympics.
When I was up in Belfast there going to the Icartole seminar.
Belfast Giants.
There was an ice hockey match on.
Yeah, Belfast Giants.
I didn't know about it. And
the SSC Arena.
I'd like to go up and watch a match.
Yeah, I would as well. The standard wouldn't be as high. Like, but it's me one regret that any time I've ever gone to America, the places that I've gone, it's not an ice hockey. Like, Vegas isn't an ice hockey place.
No. No.
When I was in New York, I went in the off season, so couldn't go see that game.
Yeah.
The Rangers would have been good. I'm a Detroit Red Wings man myself anyway. Yeah. Or the Pittsburgh Penguins. I have a bit of a soft spot for them just because I like their jerseys. It has a big penguin with a hockey stick on the front.
What's
a child,
the off-season summer, is it?
I was over there in November and there was no matches at all on. Like, So
I'm going to go over to New York in July and might catch one.
Lindsay said about them 30 for 30 documentaries as well. Lads, I hate basketball. It's a sport I wouldn't watch if you paid me money to stay on and watch.
That's why you haven't come to watch me play.
Probably, right? But there's one of those ESPN 30 for 30s. It's called Survive in Advance. It's about a coach called Jim Valvano. Just look him up.
Good, is it?
Oh my God, I love him. Absolutely love him. He took this college team from nothing to being champions and just made every one of their lives better. Like, And then he gives a big speech. And if you're not crying at the end of that speech, you don't have a soul. Moyo is worth sweating.
Love a good Spartan speech.
Yeah.
Amazing.
30 for 30, did you see the two Escobars?
I haven't. It's one that I've had recorded for months and I just don't
ever. That's excellent. It's about the Pablo Escobar, the drug trafficker.
Yeah.
The famous drug trafficker. And I can't remember your man's first name, the Colombian centre back.
The footballer?
Yeah.
No, it's not. I'm not going to be able to think of it.
Yeah, well, Escobar. His surname is Escobar. It's about, like, their kind of connections.
Yeah.
They're not, like, they cross paths. And it's just a great documentary from that time up to the 94 World Cup, because the Escobar that played for Colombia, the centre-back, he was shot after the World Cup. He conceded an own goal and got into a row in a nightclub.
Jesus.
And somebody shot him. So he got into a row.
Andreas
Escobar. He got into a row in a nightclub and someone was giving him stick about scoring the own goal and got into a fight and your man shot him.
Wowzers.
Yeah. But it's good. Like it's shown Pablo Escobar how he bought loads of football clubs, and Andreas Escobar played for one of the football clubs, so they crossed paths.
Yeah.
The two of them died around the same time. It's absolutely brilliant. It's fascinating. But
documentaries are amazing. Yeah, man. Yeah. You need to get more of them in your life.
You're talking about the ice hockey. There was one I watched recently on the recommendation of David Brock on Netflix, the battered bastards of baseball.
I've seen it on Netflix pop up. I haven't watched it yet, but I've seen it pop up a few times, man.
That is brilliant. Big thing I love about documentaries is the archive footage.
Yeah.
And photographs and stuff like that.
You have to have a strong archive game if you're going to make a documentary,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. And this one is about... It's about...
Are you getting teary eyed? You're sniffling a lot.
No, just a bit... A bit congested. Oh, bit congested.
I thought you were getting emotional talking about all these documentaries.
I am.
Yeah.
This is about Kurt Russell, the actor, Hollywood actor. His father bought a baseball club. I can't remember where it was. I think it was, for some reason, it was in Ohio. But bought a baseball club. There was in the baseball in America, the Major League Baseball, you have to, it's all about your region.
So territories
and stuff like that.
Like old school wrestling,
like. Yeah, exactly like old school wrestling. It's just like territories. But you have to join, sign up to the Major League Baseball, the MLB. But Kurt Russell's father didn't want to sign up for the MLB. So he set up a baseball club and they were an independent of it. So they got really successful over a period of 7 or 8 years. He got all former MLB players to play in his team. Players that would have been adjudged to have been their careers over and stuff like that. Anyway, they got 6, 7, 8 years later, they got promoted and they were brilliant. Then the MLB wanted to buy them. And there's a rule that states that the MLB can buy a club for, let's say it's $8,000. Well, Kurt Russell's father was like, there's not a chance I'm letting you go for that amount.
Yeah.
And brought them to court and got what he thought he deserved in the figures.
Yeah.
But it's just a great feel-good documentary about these players that were kind of let go from their clubs. They were finished, but Kurt Russell's father brought them to this club and brought them to new heights. It was deadly.
Brilliant.
I don't know if I gave it justice there, but check it out, The Battered Bastards of Baseball. I also loved Senna, that documentary. Talk about sweaty eyes watching that.
Oh my God, I went to see that in the cinema.
No way.
In Dundrum Cinema. I'll never forget a screen 7. The last 10 minutes of that.
Oh, the last 10 minutes.
And I like F1. I'm a big F1 fan. I've gone to maybe 6, 7 Grand Prix at this stage. You know what I mean? I can remember Senna's crash. It was 1994. It's one of the first kind of childhood memories that I have, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
And
I was too young to understand exactly what was going on. But at the same time, had enough understanding to realise it was bad. Like
the weird thing about that documentary that I felt was that as you're watching it, you feel like it was made because you knew. Feel like the director or whoever was producing it was making it known he was going to die.
But I think it was one of those documentaries that, 90% of the people are going to sit down and watch that know about Ayrton Senna, or at least they know he died like, I mean, up until last, well, I suppose you could say technically this year.
What I mean, though, is some all of the quotes that we're dying. Giving. The quotes that we're giving at Senna, and you just think, whoa, that's a bit spooky. Or,
but you see, it's weird. Like, I read a book, I'm trying to think of the name of the guy that wrote it. He's an F1 journalist, actually. It's called The Death of Ayrton Senna. Absolutely amazing book. For anybody who's interested in F1, I would, Richard Williams, I think, who also wrote it, I would totally recommend this book. It basically goes through the entire race weekend. Think Senna had been saying, you have to remember that weekend, and it's touched on the documentary as well, another F1 driver died in a practice session, Roland Ratzenberger from Austria. Mm. And Senna wasn't going to race. But he was so upset by this. Like, this is the first death F1 had had in years. Like, and he wasn't actually going to race.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, when you put everything into context that weekend and everything else in that, I don't want to ruin it if anybody hasn't seen it.
But there
it,
was,
like,
well, he wasn't going to race because of some of the rules, wasn't it?
There was issues over the rules and over some of the safety issues at the Imola Grand Prix. Yeah. There's so many little things that you just look at.
Do you think his death could have been avoided?
100%.
Oh, for sure.
100%. God. And that's why this book is so good, because even to this day, there's still a huge grey area over it. Like, you know what I mean? The car was taken away because it was in Italy. It became a homicide investigation. Patrick Head and Frank Williams, the owner and the chief mechanic of the Williams racing team, because Senna was driving for Williams. It was the team he was racing for when he crashed and died. These guys were brought up on manslaughter charges. There was, you know, people are saying evidence was tampered with. And you know what I mean? Ultimately, what it boils down to was a freak accident. It more or less, it was a freak accident. The angle he hit the wall and the way the tyre and one of the suspension forks came back at him is what killed him.
Yeah.
If that had been, you know, a split second either way, or if it had been a quarter of an inch another way, or Senna would have got out of that car, walked away, just being out of the Grand Prix.
See,
but
when
so many things in that just seem like they weren't coincidence, though. Do you know what I mean?
When the body was brought back to Brazil.
Oh, my God.
That's when someone beside me started cutting the onions.
Oh, man.
In a hoop.
Yeah.
Do you know, the director of that Senna directed the Amy Winehouse one?
I was just going to ask you about that. I've seen that
in the cinema. I thought that was excellent as
really
well.
Really good, yeah.
And he's had to direct him the new Cristiano Ronaldo one.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a trailer for that.
Yeah, he's out there doing those three ones. Now, the Amy Winehouse one, although it's a different kind of subject and whatever, but it's the footage is excellent, the people involved are excellent, and it's cut the same way, it's produced the same way, and you're just constantly just enthralled by it, and what, like, the next scene, what bit of information do you get now, or, you know, it's good, it's very sad.
I was surprised by the reaction I had to the Amy Winehouse one, because I felt like I knew how the story went, but watching it and seeing her as a 17 and 18-year-old kind of doing an interview, there was one stage and she was like, no, Jesus, I don't want to be famous. I couldn't handle that, you know. I couldn't handle paparazzi. And sure, my music's not mainstream, it's jazz. And then you could see when she done rehab and she had to keep performing all the Back to Black songs, she's kind of going like, my music's very personal to me. I was at a certain stage in my life, but I've moved on from there, and I feel like I'm dragging myself through the trauma every time I have to go and play these songs again, but that's what people want to hear. And then her relationship with Blake and that whole thing, it was just like, Jesus, why was there nobody in that girl's life that just stepped in and said, stop it,
exactly. Yeah. And like, there's her very close friends are involved in the making of the documentary, and her father didn't want that to do with the documentary, but there is archive footage of her father. Like, there's an incident where her friends, I think they take her off stage and they force her to a rehab center in some huge hotel, and it's a week before an American tour, and her father and her manager tell the friends, one of her close girlfriends takes her passport off her and just hides it.
Yeah.
And the father and the manager's like, give us the passport back. She's passport back. She has an American tour next week. It's all booked. It's all signed.
Yeah,
and she's like, no,
sick.
She's not going anywhere. She's sick.
She's bulimia. Yeah.
Terrible bulimia. And also her drugs, her drug use.
It was just marijuana at that stage, though. I think the friends were saying she was stoned the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was crack.
Okay.
Because she was in the rehab facility. It was heroin, definitely.
It was heroin,
heroin,
maybe, yeah.
It was heroin.
She hadn't met Blake at this stage, had she?
Yeah, she had. Blake introduced her to heroin.
Yeah.
So the manager and the father said to their friends, I'd never forget this bit, doctors and lawyers have known to be to have been able to work on heroin, Amy will be fine.
Jesus.
So she went to do the American tour.
Mm.
Jesus.
And the scene where she was in, where was it she went to in the end? She was on holiday the whole time.
Bahamas.
Yeah.
It's one of St. Lucia, was it?
Oh, St. Lucia, yeah. And she was, so she went to, she was to go for a month, just had a month off, and she wound up staying for 4 or 5 months because she got clean over there. She just had no problems in her life. There was no paparazzi, there was no nothing. And her dad arrives over with his documentary team. He was making a documentary and he hadn't contacted her, hadn't told her. She had no idea. And she was like playing with her nieces or nephews or something. And this couple came over and were like, "Oh, we get a photo. We're really sorry to ask you." And she was like, "Well, you're not sorry because you've just asked me, you know." Sure. And she was a bit pissy about it.
But she just wanted to be on a holiday. It was a rest. And her dad brings a photo.
And the dad.
The camera crew. And then her dad
gives out to her for being rude to
the tourists. Yeah. It's mad. Like people will. I've seen people already, like, you know, give out, you know, things like she deserved it. She knew what she was doing, but like you don't take drugs knowing that you're going to die. And she actually didn't die of drug use. She died of
her organs failed, her bulimia
and alcoholism. Yeah. But like the same people would happily do a few lines of cocaine every weekend or pop a few pills when people have died from popping pills and taking cocaine. So. Mm. I was a big fan of her music now, and I really enjoyed the documentary. It's very sad.
I just hate to see that stuff like that can go on where people are in that situation and you can see it all untangling and nobody, like, I know my mum and my dad would just be like, get the, I don't care if it's Simon Cowell at the door, she's going nowhere, she's a junkie, she needs to get clean, I don't care if we're poor, you know. But then you have her dad trying to cash in on her and the fella staying with her because he was funding, like, kind of, you see she wanted to get clean and he kind of didn't, and he needed her not to be clean because she was funding his problem, you know. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah. But be interesting what his Ronaldo one's going to be like. That's how we got onto the Excellent Navy
one. Documentary yeah. maker.
The chapter about Ronaldo and Herda one will be some crack.
Ronaldo and...
Crack pun intention.
Pajo.
Ronaldo and Pajo. I hope Pajo gets a brief mention of this.
Yes, the Real debut.
Yeah. Another one I've been on a mad one for, like with the whole documentary buzz and all that, lads. Mount Everest.
Is that on Netflix? It's a movie.
There is a movie out at the moment, and now I think
because I seen a documentary on it about 3 years ago.
Was it Beyond the Summit by any chance?
Yeah.
About Edmund Hillary.
Is that on
no,
Netflix?
No, no, no. It was.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
No, it wasn't about Edmund Hillary. It was about the people that were climbing it and came into trouble, and them and all the...
Into thin air?
Yeah.
The 1996 avalanche?
Yeah.
Lads, right, Mount Everest is fucking mental, right? Firstly, it's 29,035 feet above sea level. Now, I can't comprehend how tall that is.
No,
neither can I. I've stood next to somebody who's 7'2". And thought, fuck, you're tall. Mount Everest.
Who just stands beside 7'2"?
Can't remember his name now. Some giant of a man.
Basketballer, I'd imagine.
Can't remember his name. No,
he
wasn't.
He play basketball if he's not.
No, he was just... Was he?
The thing that gets me
what
about...
A dead air there while I was trying to rack me brains.
I mean, but I'm just interested who you know that's 7'2".
Oh, I don't know him. Like,
the thing that gets me about Mount Everest
tall,
like, is...
Tall. Someone tall, like... You're tall, it's a photo.
You know, you hear about all these people getting to the top of Mount Everest and then people dying on Mount Everest or whatever, but the devastating thing that I learned from that documentary is people actually die on the way down.
Yeah. Yeah.
More than on the way up.
More people dying on the way
top.
Down.
All these people that are dying are dying on the way down.
Now how many dead bodies are on Mount Everest?
200.
Over 200. And they're just left there because it's so hard to get them down.
Yeah.
Like they become... It's very morbid and it's very weird, but they become almost
points,
like reference points for climbers. There's one famous one. Google it. Green Boots.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
I'm not even messing, man. Just Google.
Are the boots still sticking up?
Well, this is right. Gets weird, right? They reckon it was one of in that 1996 avalanche. Just talking about that. I think like 18 people were killed. Most of them Sherpas. One guy from
most of them
Sherpas. The guys who helped
the guides.
there's a main theory about who Green Boots is, but because it can't be proven, he's still just colloquially referred to as Green Boots because he was wearing green boots. And when you die on the mountain, you're left on the mountain. And whatever you're wearing, it's there forever. And because it's so cold, you know, bar frostbite, you're pretty much perfectly preserved. Like, so weird, so morbid. But Green Boots was 1,000 feet away from the summit and got into difficulties. Climbed into a kind of little alcove, into a cave to try and get shelter to, like, recoup or whatever. But if you stop that far up, your body basically freezes to the point whereby you're still conscious, but you no longer have the ability to move.
Oh, God.
So people will be passing by, and this weird, like, there's like a climber's code kind of thing where they'd be like, look, saving one life is better than, you know, climbing Mount Everest 100 times. But people pass by all the time, and they think that it's either somebody who's already dead or it's somebody who's beyond saving. So they have to make the choice of, do we press on to the summit, which is 1,000 feet away,
or
do we try and save? But anyway, so I can't remember the name that they reckon this person is. He was a Tibetan fella from the Tibetan-India border police or something like that. But anyway, he died in this 96 avalanche incident, and his body just stayed in the mountain, and he became this reference point for people. But recently, his body's gone. And over the years, like, it's weird, his body was facing towards the summit 1 year, away from the summit another year.
But so will you be just, you're a climber and you're walking by, you just walk by his body?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, like, in one of the documentaries I was watching about it, in order to reach the summit, there's a place, they call it the Death Valley, where essentially most people have died either trying to get to the summit or coming back down. And in order for you to get to the summit, you have to climb over, at least, depending on what way the snow drifts are and what way the storms are being and whatnot, at least 10 visible corpses.
And did it show the corpse on the documentary?
Yeah, you see everything. You can Google them. No, you can Google photos of them.
Animals there eating the bodies at all, no?
Too cold for animals. Wouldn't get animals. 29,000 feet, we'll see. Like, you're not going to get animals.
Can anyone climb Mount Everest? Or is
there Jesus, no. You'd need some amount of...
No, but like...
altitude training.
Yeah. Mad bastards climb it without oxygen.
Do they go through checks before they climb Mount Everest? And who does the checks?
You have to get a license from...
That's what
the
I
government.
Mean, yeah.
But, like, you don't
from
have
from your
to,
own government or the Tibetan government?
The Tibetan or the Nepali, depending on which side of the border you climb it on. You have to get it, and that costs $10,000. And then everything else on top of that, equipment, training, supplies, paying your Sherpa. A cheap climb, they reckon, a cheap climb would cost between $25,000 and $30,000 American.
An Irishman climbed Mount Everest, didn't he?
Did, yeah, I can't remember his name, but he did. Edmund Hillary was the first man to successfully, the first documented man to successfully, people have claimed that Sherpa has reached it before him and all this kind of stuff, but he's the first man who has been documented as successfully reaching the summit of Mount Everest.
I think I worked for a company, Friends First, and we had a conference before. It was like a thank you conference. We went down to the Mount Woosley Hotel, stayed there for, we were there from Friday morning, all day Friday, big party Friday night, back Saturday. But on the Friday, say lunchtime, there was a talk by the Irishman who climbed Mount Everest.
Right.
I can't think of his name, but it was a real, real motivating psychologist kind of talk. It was a real sport and psychology talk, and it was absolutely brilliant. Can't for the life of me now think of his name.
I don't know. I can't remember his name either, to be honest.
But he was just real motivational, you know. This is a man that was at the climb of Mount Everest.
Yeah, like, it's mad. Like, it's...
See
if you can Google him there. Like, Everest is... Like, I've never had any curiosity at all about it other than knowing it's a big old hill, like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But in the last sort of month or so, I've become borderline obsessed with reading about it and watching stuff about it and all that. Like, I've read books about Hillary now. And this Green Boots fella has completely thrown me because it's so mad. Like, just seriously, just Google.
Where's he gone? Yeah.
Google Green Boots. Yeah, in 2004, they reckon either somebody buried him.
This
or he went missing in a snowdrift.
I just thought they're getting this is nice.
Yeah.
I just got a message on our Aisling and Daly podcast. Episode. Some Ronan O'Malley comments.
How are you, Ronan?
Brilliant podcast, loved it. This is new to me. I can't wait to hear the rest of them. Nice one and all.
Great stuff. Cheers, Ralph.
The thing about Everest, right, when you're saying you become borderline obsessed, these things that people do, like they set themselves goals, I always wonder why, like what makes a person decide Mount Everest is my thing and I'm going to decide that's, I'm going to
climb. Just adventurous.
Yeah, but are they, like, you know? So like if you're, I suppose, a mountain climber, Everest is your Everest, I suppose.
Yeah, I think part of it, especially with something like climbing, like, I don't know, Kilimanjaro, like K2, or, you know, the Matterhorn, or you know, climbing Everest. I think it is, with Everest especially, I think it's literally just kind of this thing of, there is nothing in this world higher or harder to accomplish.
Yeah.
Nothing. And they're like, it baffles me there's people who have climbed it without oxygen like that. Like, I mean, hypoxia kicks in after 20,000 feet. If you have to go 9,000 feet beyond that, suffering from hypoxia, like,
what's
well, that's what I was going to explain to Meryl. The reason people aren't taking bodies down is because when you're that high up, the oxygen levels in the air is so low, taking a step is the equivalent, you'd be wrecked, just, you know, it's so out of breath.
Lads on oxygen were counting it and they were taking 16 to 17 breaths per step.
What's the documentary on Netflix?
The one that I watched last night was Beyond the Summit.
And that's on Netflix? That's,
yeah, and that's about Edmund. It's about the first successful expedition. Now, there's been hundreds of attempts before that, you know, ranging back as far.
And the George, footage and all is brilliant, is it?
You see, you have to remember, it's the 50s when the first successful out, because there wouldn't be a lot of archive footage. So what they do is they do a recreation thing, and it's done well, like.
Yeah.
But they have Edmund Hillary talking about it, the people from his crew talking about it, the real photos. It's very well put together, like, you know what I mean?
And what was the other one that you watched?
I can't remember the name.
The up-to-date one.
Cannot remember the name of it, but that's the one that goes into detail about the corpses and all that. Like, and about,
that's the one I want to watch.
Like that, I must find the name of it. It's just, it's morbid. It is. It's heavy, like.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they talk about one of the most famous ones, a guy called George Mallory. He was a British, basically, aristocrat, I suppose he was. Like, but he went missing on the mountain in the 20s, trying to climb it. His body was only found in 1992 or 1993, even later than that, actually.
And it hadn't even decayed or anything because of the cold.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It's in the permafrost. It's almost like
must be freaky, like, because you wouldn't have aged, obviously, or anything either, so. Yeah.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So it shows the effects of frostbite. But beyond that, like, it's still,
it's, you know, as you were the day you were froze.
Yeah.
It's like the
70 years ago.
Like going into one of those chambers that Michael Jackson was trying to develop before he died.
Yeah, like it's absolutely mental. Like, and it is really morbid, and I know it's kind of a weird one to talk about, but the green boots one just gets me, because the photos of it, literally, it's like somebody's just lying down having a nap in the snow, and he's wearing an orange jacket, and his arms are folded up towards him, because obviously he's trying to keep warm, do you know what I mean? So he has his arms, he's wearing an orange jacket, he's wearing blue trousers, and he's wearing green boots. And he's just lying almost in the fetal position, just like he's trying to keep warm. And it's just, it's so, so weird to be looking at it, like. But yeah, and people pose for photos with these corpses. That's the kind of really disturbing part for me. There's one guy, I can't remember his name, but
selfies, like.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get into this point.
Yeah. Like, there's one guy, and like, he's draped in a Canadian flag and all by, you know, other climbers who, like, have paid their respects to him. There's a Canadian flag around him. There's another guy who, when he was trying to do fixed ropes for one of the climbing bits, one of the ropes snapped. He fell, got caught in the ropes, and he didn't die from freezing. He died from hanging.
Hanging himself.
And he's still there.
Hanging?
Yeah.
You need to get the name of that one, though.
It's so morbid, man. It's just weird.
Did you download it?
No. Like a lot of the deaths I read about, but then it just so happened that one of the documentaries I was watching happened to touch on, especially green boots, like a goal, because green boots is one of the most famous ones, like, because of the fact that it's so close to the summit, it's effectively a marker. That's how weird that is. He is a marker for other climbers.
But he's gone now, so they think someone moved him, someone tried to bring him down.
In 2014, the body went missing, so they don't know if somebody finally buried him, or they don't know if it's just that in a storm or in an avalanche or in a blizzard or whatever,
he got covered and moved or whatever.
Yeah. But either way, it's weird, like. So, I don't know, but that happens a lot. Like, and you hear a lot of stories as well about, like, they'd be, say, husband and wives, or they'd be partners. And when they're coming back down from the summit, it's starting to get dark. And they get separated. So one will go looking for the other. And one will fall down a ridge, never to be seen again. And the other will be found frozen on the spot from looking for their partner. Like, Jesus. It's heartbreaking, man. That mountain just messes people up, like. I say that as if I have goals to climb it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sitting here and I've got a 15-year plan. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to start off simple, lads. Right. I want to be able to climb the stairs without getting out of breath first.
What training would
then,
you even do?
Then I want to climb Cloyne Hill. From Cloyne Hill, I go Brayhead. From Brayhead to the Sugarloaf. From the Sugarloaf to Ben Bulbin. From Ben Bulbin, I go to Carrigtootle. From Carrigtootle to Crowpatrick. From Crowpatrick over to the Alps. From the Alps to K2. From K2 to the Himalayas and up Mount Everest. 15 years, I'll do it.
Yeah, right.
I named off a lot of mountains there, didn't I?
That yeah, was all right,
wasn't it? Good job. Well, I was wondering whether you had like prepared that because that was impressive.
Ah, that's Miss Redmond.
Did you do geography?
Yeah, Miss Redmond's geography class. Well done, yeah. Val Redmond. Fair play.
I dropped geography after the junior cert.
Yeah.
Couldn't be dealing with it.
No, but I'd highly recommend anybody, look, if you're looking for something to read or just looking for something to
watch. You don't know, but you can't remember the bloody name of that one.
No, but just get on
that's
any
useless.
If you Google it, you'd find it, though, you know.
That's useless.
Just hang on, just listen to me. Just get on anything to do with Mount Everest. It's just so fascinating, man. Ridiculously fascinating.
That and David Attenborough documentaries.
Oh, David Attenborough.
Love David Attenborough.
Love David Attenborough.
Yeah, yeah.
Frozen Planet, I think, might be one of my favourite TV series.
Didn't we touch on this before? We talked about David Attenborough.
We did.
We talked about how we loved his voice.
The fact
that we'd
like him to read us bedtime stories.
He would be my bucket list guest on the podcast.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah. Great.
I honestly, if he had him in the podcast, I'd wear a short and tie. I rock up every week wearing shorts and a hoodie. Like, doesn't matter who the guest is. But if we had David now, I'd be wearing a short and tie.
Did you not see
and a polar bear pin.
Did you not see the David Attenborough at the Galapagos?
I did.
That was unreal.
Oh, man.
He did it like, he did one series like in the 1950s and he went back, he did it with Sky about 3 years ago.
Yeah, I remember.
And met
yeah.
the same turtle.
All the fields, man. All the fields just hit me at once, they did. Unbelievable.
All the fields.
All the fields.
You're right.
Met the same turtle.
Really? Oh, man.
Brilliant.
He's deadly.
The Galapagos.
Do you ever see the one where they...
that in 3D, no less.
Brilliant. 3D doesn't work for me because I'm blind in one eye, so it's just like... I just get shit coming at my right eye, like... I'm blind in my left.
Cover your right eye there.
When I was a kid...
Since forever, right? What happened?
Oh, it's a long story. When I was a kid...
What am I doing now?
I have no idea, Graham. I can't fucking see.
He's blind. He just told it.
Right, can I take it down now?
Oh, shit.
When I was that's nothing. People don't believe me, and I've had Mickeys in my face and everything. Like,
Jesus Christ. Meryl was flipping Danny off.
Yeah. One eye Danny.
Yeah. When I was a kid.
Could you compete at the Paralympics?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Probably. Me and you should do double act. But when I was a kid, remember when you were a kid and shit 3D films, you used to get one red and one blue lens?
Yeah.
We just had blue shit. Absolutely brutal it was, yeah.
Did something happen or have you always been blind in that eye?
No, I had a torn in my eye and all when I was a kid. And I used to be mad weird about wearing spectacles. And I used to hate wearing them, so I'd do everything I could not to wear them. My vision just got progressive. I used to wear a patch and all in my eyes.
Remember people used to wear the patches on the eyes?
Exactly. I couldn't see a breeze wearing that patch. My
what the hell did you wear the patch for?
My eye was that far torn in, the only thing I was seeing was the back of my head.
You could see a plane.
My ma used to put, like, he used to get little stickers to put in the patch. Like, I used to get little airplanes on. My ma used to transfer them on. I'd be like, now look, you have an airplane on. I'm like, ma, my eye is covered. I can't see that. as if that's helping. It's not on the inside of the patch. Yeah. I can't believe and see it, ma.
I remember, like,
you looked cool though.
I did. I looked like a fucking gammy pirate.
I remember in primary school, there used to be about 4 or 5 people wearing patches on their eyes.
Yeah, I used to wear a patch. And my eyesight just got gradually worse. And this is no word of a lie, lads. I woke up one morning and my left eye wasn't working.
Really?
Swear to God.
And have you seen anything about it recently? Like, is it something that can be undone?
No, like, I went and asked about laser surgery and I went and asked about all that sort of stuff. And they're like, nah. See, it's weird, right? People, when you say there's different levels of blindness and there's different... Blindness affects people differently and all that, right? For me, the type of blindness that I have is, you know, Predator.
Right. Here we go.
Of course, this is how it goes.
No, because people.
I don't know him personally, but go on.
I don't know Mr. Predator, to you know. But people associate blindness with just blackness because they figure it's like closing your eyes. But when you close your eyes, what you're actually seeing is the inside of your eyelids. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if there's blackness when you. That's what's happening. Like. So for me, the way it works is that my right eye works fine. I've got better than 20/20 in my right eye, but my left eye. Effectively what I see is just shadows. It's like just seeing different scales of grey, like.
Yeah.
And it's just blurry. So I don't actually see shapes that I can make out or
like. You're the predator.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I just see blurriness. So when I cover that eye, essentially like all I see is this grey blur, like. So that's, I don't know, that's it.
So like if you had a really thin eyelid and it was a little bit see through, but not useful.
Do you know what I'm saying? Do you ever get water in your goggles? Think that only you're colourblind also.
Jesus. And come here, you did get a look at there's nothing
they can
do.
Well, like, I don't know if there's nothing they can do, but like they were like, no, laser wouldn't suit, laser couldn't suit. Just, you know, wear glasses. And I'm like, well, I need glasses, so that's handy. Like, but I've never gone to like see about an eye transplant.
An eye specialist.
Some new age hippie shit. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
take your eyeball out, give it a bit of a scrub, rewire it, pop it back in.
Yeah, I don't know how all that jazz works. Like, and, you know, like, I'm happy. Like, I'm all right.
Good man.
See, it's grand. Like people, the weird part for me is I try to understand that people watch things with two eyes, and that freaks me out. Do you know what I mean? Because all I've ever known, or all I can remember, is focusing on something with one eye. But, like, even, like, watching telly, I was talking to one of the lads about it. And I don't know why it came into my head that he's focusing on this with two eyes and he's seeing it with two eyes, whereas I'm focusing on it with just one eye and I'm only seeing. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No.
Yeah, so only because I got an eye test yesterday. I was getting a medical at the doctor's and she was testing my eyes and it was annoying me that she was like covering one eye and then the other eye. And
Do you ever consider wearing a pirate's patch?
for the crack, like?
Yeah. Save that for the Halloween episode. Danny's coming as a pirate.
Yeah. Look, they've all been done. I've always got blind Joe. I don't care. Well, I used to have a blind dog called Ralph, and people be like, oh, half blind kid, half blind boy. Be like, fully blind dog, half blind kid, you get ticks with your mouth. We didn't know that dog was blind, me Daniel killed it.
No way.
Brought him up to the fields, up in Lockingstown, up to where the football pitches are. We didn't know he was blind, right? Because you threw a stone for this dog, he'd come back the same stone. You threw a ball for that dog, he'd come back that ball. You said, come here to me, boy, he'd come here to you. He knew where you were. Like, we thought he was a perfectly healthy, happy little mongrel. He was a great dog. Named Ralph after Ralph from the Muppets, but whatever. we brought him
How
up.
How did you nearly kill him then?
Brought him up Lockingstown pit field. Your dad hit a football from him. Ralph went running after it. Your dad may have kicked it too close to the goalpost.
You ran into the goalpost.
You don't have that perception when you're half blind. That's don't have that perception when you're fully blind. Ralph ran head first into the goalpost. It bonged like the angel.
Is that how you figured out he was blind?
Yeah, that's what he figured out he was blind. God. He was sparked out cold. I thought he was dead. My dad had to carry the dog back from Lockingstown football pitches to Laurel Avenue.
No.
Jesus.
With a crying 6-year-old. My dog is dead.
Turning me into a dog lover.
Brought him to the vet. And the vet
Dogs
was like,
are great.
He's not dead. He's just blind.
He's just blind and you've knocked him out.
And now he has concussion. Leave him alone for a few days. Don't be playing with him. Try to tell that to a 6-year-old who loves his dog. Can Ralph come out to play now? No.
How many dogs have you had?
3. Your mommy tore them. I had Ralph, I had Misty, and now I've got the Walrus. Misty broke me heart, man.
Cleo's great.
Love Cleo. She's getting old. Every day.
You always have dogs?
I couldn't live in a house without a dog.
Love it.
Genuinely could not live in a house without
and
a dog.
And does Cleo work as a guard dog?
Oh, does she what? Cleo barks at Anton, man. Anton enters that back garden. That dog is on high alert on a mad
Is she
one.
Out the back all night?
No.
No.
Couldn't do that. Anybody who leaves
So if anyone got into the house as well.
Unless they have sausages in their pocket, they're getting eaten.
Speaking of house intruders, just...
People at the border, be vigilant.
Be vigilant, yeah, because a friend of the family's house was broken into. They didn't take anything.
There's a lot of houses
They just got
into.
The car keys and robbed the brand new car. And the guards came and... My mum's friends, I got, like, we didn't even hear the engine or anything, and the guard said, no, they're organised crime. What they're doing is they're rolling the cars out of the driveway, rolling it down the road, and then starting the engine a good bit down the road. So be extra vigilant.
Be vigilant now. Don't leave your keys within anywhere near the
front door.
Don't leave them anywhere, because if they can see in the letterbox, and what they're doing is they're getting these poles with magnets on them, and generally that's how a lot of them are getting done for cars as well. Like, just lads, look, be vigilant. Lock your doors. If you have an alarm, set the alarm.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Things like that.
I always bring my car keys to the bedroom with me when I go to bed.
Yeah, don't leave iPads, laptops, something like that out, lads. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But sure, the car key is for her husband's van. We're in her car.
No, you can't be doing
no,
that.
No, what they did was they took them out and they left them on the wall outside the house.
Because they didn't want the van?
Didn't want the van.
Jesus.
And the guard said that there's been about 5 or 6 robberies, say, in Sallynoggin, Shankill, Ballybrack.
Yeah, there's been a few of them I've heard of lately. It's very distressing.
In one night, the CCTV over the M50 had a cortege of 5 or 6 cars leaving the Cherrywood exit and going on to, said the Talla exit. It's mad.
Madness, like, but, yeah.
They didn't even take anything in the house. They took a Michael Kors watch. And they took the car.
It's just the thought that someone's been in your house would be terribly upset.
Absolutely terrifying.
I was actually napping this afternoon. I had a dream that someone, because I fell asleep. I live in a ground floor apartment and normally I close the curtains if I'm on the bed or whatever. And I didn't. I left them open because I was reading and I just dozed off. And obviously it was on my mind that someone could be just walking past, having a look at me, having me nap. And I had a distressing dream that someone was there in the gaff.
Yeah. But the thoughts, like you said, of someone in your house. About 2 years ago, someone tried to get in to Ayres. Now, we had only single locked.
Yeah.
The house as well.
And did they try and come in the front or the back? Because you're out the back, aren't you?
I'm out the back, but they tried to get in the front.
Mm.
And it was only single locked. We didn't double lock it that night for some reason. And they couldn't get in. They had a crowbar. And it's like they banged the door in frustration that they couldn't get in. And I don't know, I think my brother woke up I don't know whether he woke up during it, but he heard noise anyway, and he woke up. And my dad's like, "You're hearing things, just go back to bed." And he's like, "I'm not hearing things." Scared them off. But they got in, they tried the next door neighbour's house.
Jesus.
And opened up the next door neighbour's house with a crowbar. And the next door neighbour actually fell asleep on the sofa and seen them in his hall. And then, then just scared them off.
Jesus.
But like, I found it mad that the guards said that there was a cortege of 5 or 6 cars leaving the M50 going off the Talla exit.
Yeah, so the gang's going together, you know.
So there's gangs like driving around.
Just picking cars that'll be useful for them for whatever it is they need. If they're getaway cars, if they're high powered, whatever, you know.
This was a side of Ibiza, like. But the idea that like the guards were watching that, and they can't really do anything about it. Could they not just follow the cars and see where they end up?
Figure out where they are, yeah.
Surely there's
CCTV would end though, wouldn't it?
No, but sure, if they seen them come off the Cherrywood exit.
Yeah, but sure, how would they know at the time that they were 5 stolen cars, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what they said.
There's 5 cars going on.
There was five or six cars in a row
left
the Cherrywood exit and went off the Talla exit.
Yeah.
Like one of the regis probably would it be.
I think it was the regis, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it was.
That's what I mean. After the reported stolen, they would know that's all the stolen cars went together. But at the time, if someone was sitting watching it, they wouldn't know.
They're not even robbing. They're not ransacking the houses or anything like that. They're just taking the car keys and taking the cars.
Mm.
Sorry, I got the one for the yawn there. But bit of a weird note almost finish on that, lads, talking about burglaries.
It's just a warning to be vigilant.
Yeah. Yeah.
These people are just coming out and they're just, it's like, just look out for cars in your estate or anything like that you're not familiar with.
Don't be a dickhead about it.
Yeah.
If you see a white van that you've never seen before, it's not a paedophile trying to rob your child. Calm down, Facebook. Facebook warnings. Look, I'm all for people, you know, with a little bit of a community watch, a little bit of community spirit and all that. Great. Right? But don't. For the love of God, just because you don't like the look of somebody in a vehicle, don't take a photo of that person, post it online, and say, this person's a paedophile. You don't know that. right? If that's what it is, contact the Gardaí. If the Gardaí put something out saying suspected paedophile in the area, fine. But don't make up shit either. Yeah.
So what you're trying to say is not everyone driving a white van is a paedophile.
I'm not a paedophile. Stop saying I'm a paedophile.
You and White Lightning.
No, look, I'm just saying
it. I know, it's just, I'm just saying, just like, these people are obviously scouting estates in our area to rob a car.
Yeah. And like that, they probably are, as Dan said, looking in the window, seeing there's the car keys, that's handy. You know, if you make it hard for them, they'll go on to the next gaff, because that'll be easier.
And let's get a dog. Rescue a dog. I'm telling you now, forget alarms, the biggest deterrent to anybody in this day and age, having a dog in the house. Get a dog. Rescue a dog, lads. Make it feel loved. You will not believe the love you get back, and I swear to God, people, don't break into houses.
Developing a relationship with Fleur and me at the minute. Love that dog.
Tell you now, Lynn.
She had a sleepover last night, but she snored all night. She's never sleeping in the same bedroom as me again. She was like a full-grown man.
Yeah.
And I think she was confused as to where she was, because I kept hearing banging like off wood. I think she was standing up out of her bed and hitting into the locker that she was beside, thinking that she was wherever she normally sleeps.
Tell you, lads. Getting a dog. You just don't understand the love you get back off dog, man.
I love a dog.
Loved them. Absolutely loved them. But look. Pretty much out of time for this week. So that's what the story is going down all around the brack. Come on, the lads. It goes for anywhere. It's not just the brack though, lads. Look, it's coming to that time of year. You know, longer nights. Winter is coming. It's going to be the coldest winter we've ever had, according to the news.
They say that every year.
You know, just wrap up. Just be safe. If you know any old people out there who live with themselves, check in on them, lads. You know what I mean?
We don't want to freeze like the guys on Mount Everest.
Exactly. Those old people climbing up the stairs is Everest. They get altitude sickness. Check in on them. Do they need anything? Do they need a few tins of beans, whatever? Lindsay doesn't
know
people.
No, they don't need tins of beans. They need nutritious food.
I was just saying,
not tins of sugar.
They mightn't have the heating on all year. You know what I mean? Check that they need the radiator's blade. Call in. Do something decent for some people. It takes 5 minutes of your day to say hello to somebody.
All right. Go on the Good Samaritan.
Absolutely. I'm just saying that because I love old people. In other news, Mon Ireland. Hashtag deal for Paulie. Hashtag thanks Paulie. Hashtag WTS pod. I'm going to be emotional this weekend. God, I'm going to miss that, man. Look, that's it. We're done. We're out. Check out all those documentaries you recommended. We'll put a list of them up on the blurb above this episode.
Try and find out the name of them, because I want to watch that myself.
I will, if not, just watch all the Mount Everest.
Yeah, go through 10.
And then go on Mastermind and have it as your specialist.
Exactly. But look, if you want to hear more from Graham Merrow Merrigan and you want to know what the Ballybrack Bulls are getting up to, and you want
we
to
lost
know,
by 4 points on Saturday.
I wasn't going to say that.
49-45 against Galway.
Unlucky, mate.
No, it's okay. Thank you.
Yeah, good man. So if you want to know more about the adventures of Merrow, where can they get it?
At Ballybrack Bulls WBC at Merrigamania.
Good man. Doyler.
If they want Merrigamania on Instagram.
Everywhere.
Instagram. At Merrigamania.
Your Insta game is strong.
The Bull's not on Insta, no?
No. No, there's no need.
No need.
Twitter. Insta infuriates me lately. It's just full
Twitter
of
Facebook
bimbos stuff. Claiming to be nutrition experts. And
oh, here we go.
Hang on a second.
It's the outro, Lindsay, not the intro.
Hang on. I want to defend the bimbos because, may I just say, girls, is doing a great job.
He's looking grey.
He's listen, looking grey.
Listen.
Bows with tats on Instagram. Oh, God bless you.
Yeah, listen. Hashtag fitness, yeah.
Hashtag fit fam.
Yeah, all that stuff, man. Look, fair play to Scarlos. If it was a different if it was a different app, I'd be swiping right. You know what I mean?
Oh, you're going to get in trouble.
She doesn't listen, I'm safe. She'll listen to this week now and I'll get battered.
Cubes, Daniel.
Cubes, Moni Messon, you're the only person that swipe whatever direction you're supposed to swipe for. Oh, wait, is it left
Russians
or right?
Russians will be after you.
Which way do you swipe for liking, left or right?
We don't know.
I have no idea. He doesn't know because he's never he swiped no. He swipes yeah to everything.
Oh, man, I hope somebody listening to this finds you on the Tinder. Oh, and then they connect with us on Twitter and they tell us all about it. We are at WTSpod on Twitter. We're not on Tinder. And if you want to find us on Facebook, we are What's the Story Podcast. You can watch or listen to all our previous episodes on iTunes, on Podbean, on Podcast Addict, on Stitcher Smart Radio, and all good podcast outlets out there. Just search
all good podcast outlets.
All good podcast outlets. And some rubbish ones too. Some rubbish ones too, man. Just search WTS Pod. And we're there. I am at Dan Joe Murray on the Twitter and on the Instagram.
Longest outro ever.
Unbelievable outro skills.
We always lose you at the outro, Mero. There's always a giggle from you.
We lost the run of ourselves completely there, lads.
Adios. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hashtag deal for Paulie. Come on, Ireland.